We're in conversation with UW-Madison Chancellor Rebecca Blank on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Chancellor Blank will become Northwestern University's president this summer. Typical in exit interviews, we're going to go through a bunch of different questions as we try to get her on the line here, getting a read on the health and the future of the flagship campus with its about 72,000 faculty, staff, and students, according to its Quick Facts page. And you can join in at any point. What has your experience been at UW-Madison? What have you seen in the work of the chancellor over her nine-year tenure, one of the longest-serving chancellors in recent UW history? You can join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org, as we're having a little bit of difficulty here this morning trying to get Chancellor Rebecca Blank on the line. Rebecca Blank has been the Chancellor of UW-Madison since 2013, and as we look at her past, where the university is headed and its budget and situation, its tuition situation, and really hearing your thoughts and experiences with the university, joining in at 800-642-1234. Having a little bit of trouble this morning getting Chancellor Blank on the line, but we're going to hopefully hear from her in just a moment. Stay with us. All right, and we're going to Chancellor Rebecca Blank. Chancellor Blank, welcome back to the Ideas Network. Can you hear me? Oh, I think.
Yeah.
Hi, Chancellor Blank. This is Kate Archer-Kent on The Morning Show. Can you hear me now?
I can indeed.
Excellent. We have our connection. So we're going to launch right into it here. You know, candidates to be your successor, they're expected to visit campus next month for interviews. What is the biggest challenge that the new chancellor will need to deal with?
Primarily, I think getting to know this campus if they come from outside, getting to know Wisconsin, really coming into the culture of this wonderful university. If they come from inside, they're going to be just fine. They're going to be set.
So if they come from inside, they're going to really have known, they're going to have known about the history, some challenges, and really have a grasp of the UW. If they come from the outside, that too is a learning experience, but they bring in other experiences as well. What advice would you give the new chancellor?
Well, my first piece of advice would be to, put the best team together that you can. I think I have a great team. Whether it will be the right team for the new chancellor is going to be up to them. But, you can't do this job alone. And having a wonderful group of deans, which we have, having a great group of vice chancellors, having a great set of department chairs, you need the right people to work across a very large and effective campus. You know, my second piece of advice is just be creative. Think about ways in which this university can move forward. Work jointly with the Board of Regents and with your leadership to make that happen.
During your tenure, you saw the state legislature cut funding for the university, imposing a tuition freeze as well. Without that strong political support, what choices will the university be forced to make? What is that situation like?
Well, there is nothing unique about Wisconsin. Virtually all public universities in the United States have faced real funding challenges as state legislatures have moved on to other priorities. So, like all other schools in the country, it's increasingly on us to generate the investment income that we need in order to hire the best faculty, provide the best educational programming, do the things that we want to do as a university. That's why it's going to take some degree of entrepreneurship and creativity to be thinking about how the university can generate its own revenues. Now, having said that, without any state money, we would be in deep trouble, and any chancellor is going to have to work closely with assistant president to fight for as much state funding as possible to make sure that particularly the students from the state of Wisconsin have access to a first-class university education.
when I think about you saying it's on us as UW-Madison inside, you raised over $4 billion last year in fundraising, way exceeding your goals. Would you say that's an example of how you have to be more independent, if you will, of finding those dollars?
Yes, there's not a university in the country, public or private, that doesn't have to at some level rely on the generosity of their alumni and their supporters, because you know the state just isn't providing very much funding anymore. And the campaign that we had over the last, it's now 7 years, I guess, as a campaign, just showed how wonderful our alumni and supporters at UW-Madison are. We set out with a goal of $3.2 billion, and we ended up at about $4.2 billion. Now, that's not spendable $4 billion. Much of that went into buildings, or it's coming in as endowment, and it gets paid out at 5% a year. Some of it is in wills and will not come in for many years. So I want to make clear that people understand that number.
You know, as you leave and take the helm of Northwestern in Illinois, which is a private university, does its detachment from state politics influence your decision there to leave?
You know, I have enjoyed working with the Wisconsin legislature. We've had our differences. We've had our challenges. That's not a reason by itself to leave this job. I've been in the job 9 years. I think it's time to let someone else take over as leadership. I'm very interested in going to a different university. You will learn different things. I'm very interested in comparing a private university to a public university. I'm sure there'll be a number of things that are very, very similar. There will be some new things to learn at Northwestern. There'll be some things here at Madison that I don't have to do there. I certainly am going to be spending less time with the legislature or with the governor, I suspect. But there'll be other challenges instead.
Yeah, I think I remember we talked about maybe 2016, 2017, and you were so concerned about faculty being poached by other major universities and felt that that was a real threat to UW-Madison. And I'm just wondering how that thinking has evolved as you see the great resignation, as you see salaries. Is the university falling behind other state, other universities around the country in its ability to attract and retain top people?
Not at all, actually. In 2015, we were in deep trouble. That was when the state legislature basically abolished our tenure statutes, were written into state law, and said to the regents, you figure out what you want to do. Now, the regents, to their credit, wrote tenure rules that were the equivalent of every one of our major peers. So while people were very worried about what would happen, it ended up in a very good place. But the result in that year was that everyone around the country, having heard that Wisconsin had gotten rid of tenure, not true, came to raid our faculty. And we had a year where almost 20% of our faculty over those 2 years had outside offers. We could have been in great trouble had we lost more of them. In the years since then, that has stopped entirely. We've had virtually no outside offers. We've won well over 80% of them. So, we're in very strong shape, both attracting and retaining our faculty right now. Some of that is because we've generated the revenue we need to keep our faculty salaries at the competitive levels they need to be at. Wasn't true when I came in. We were at the bottom of our peers, and we're now much closer to the middle of our peers, which is where we need to be.
You told employees a year ago that furloughs saved the university over $30 million. In the pandemic, if you could do it over again, would you have imposed those furloughs?
I don't think we had a choice in the pandemic, given how quickly some of our sources of revenue fell and how very uncertain the future was for the next year. I'm very glad that we imposed the furloughs the way we did, which was to say they were not equally imposed. Our higher wage employees took more furlough days than our lower wage employees. But I the point that we made that decision, which was 2 years ago when everything was shut down, we had no idea when we were going to reopen or what was going to be happening over the next year. We just had to be responsible. We had to be cautious about our expenditures.
Looking at the pandemic, the UW system was allocated $575 million in stimulus funds over the course of the pandemic, and that might be a different number that was from late last year. What impact has the federal funds had on your budget and sustaining what you need to do at UW-Madison?
Yeah, so let me note, that was the money that went to the system. Total.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's not the money that we received specifically at UW-Madison. Half of the money that we received, we were required by law to put into student aid, which was a good thing. But the result is we've now had four semesters where we've had substantial additional money to give to particularly our low-income students. And we've made additional grants to our Pell students, to our Bucky's Tuition Promise students, to our low-income students on campus, and as well as making more emergency money available to other students. And that has been incredibly helpful. The remainder of the money we've used to basically plug some of the holes that we had in other areas. Much of the money has gone to pay for our testing, our whole testing program. You know, a year ago, we were testing everyone on campus twice a week. That was a major effort, a major expenditure, both for hiring personnel as well as doing those tests. So the majority of the federal money either went to student aid or it went to cover, if you will, the public health measures we had to take as a result of the pandemic.
So how much in total have you received to date from these federal funds?
You know, I should have that number. I haven't thought about that number because those money all came in more than a year ago.
Sure.
I think our total at Madison came in somewhere around $55 to $60 million.
And, you know, as you distribute this aid to students facing the ongoing impacts of the pandemic, to Bucky's Promise, millions of dollars, about $29 million there in federal emergency aid, you know, those are one-time dollars. How do you sustain these students going into the future and keep them able to do what they need to do in their education?
Well, let me be clear that the emergency aid was particularly for students who are facing emergencies around the pandemic, which mm-hmm. is now easing. You know, we had a lot of students whose parents were laid off, lost jobs. Where they thought they had money to help cover some of their tuition was no longer available. So, you know, the federal emergency aid was designed to help students through the pandemic and through that emergency. With that being over, we are back to our normal aid dollars where, you know, we make promises to virtually all of our low-income students. That's what Bucky's Tuition Promise is about, saying if you're a Wisconsin student in a lower-income family, we will guarantee you 4 years of tuition and fees. We want you to come to this university if you're admitted and, you know, this is the right place for you. So we do have a lot of financial aid that we will continue to make available. It's just the emergency additional aid from the federal government is coming to an end.
We have UW-Madison Chancellor Rebecca Blank leaving at the end of this academic year. That's next month, to become the first female president of Northwestern University. You can take stock of the flagship campus of the UW system. Add your thoughts, your questions, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment with Chancellor Blank here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's pick up our conversation with UW-Madison Chancellor Rebecca Blank. She'll become Northwestern University's 17th president this summer. She's one of the longest-serving chancellors in recent UW-Madison history. We're taking stock of her 9 years here. With your insights, your questions, 800-642-1234. Let's talk about academic bullying, workplace environments on a college campus that are hostile. The Wisconsin State Journal did that series of reports on this, and we talked with their education reporter, Kelly Meyerhofer, about what she found. And one thing that was really disturbing in the many people she talked with, that even when they'd moved on, they feared going fully on the record, using their name. They still feared retaliation in academia. Let's take a listen.
University says that they're really trying to create a culture where people feel more comfortable in reporting. And so I think that will lead to more investigations.
Chancellor Blank, what are you doing to create that atmosphere to make people more comfortable?
Well, let me be clear that we were one of the very first universities to pass a policy making it basically a disciplinary action to provide bullying or harassing behavior. We did that in 2016, 2017. We've been implementing that policy. We continue to be the strongest policy in the Big Ten, and one of the still among a relatively few universities who have these policies. We are training faculty. We are training graduate students. We are training staff on this policy. Every case that has come to us since this policy has been in place, we have investigated, and if we have found through the investigation that the charges were correct, we have taken action. Now, does that solve the problem? You know, there are bad actors. We're a very large university. We have 22,000 faculty and staff. We need to hear about the problems before we can take action, and we don't always hear about the problems. That's one reason why we are trying to provide training and say to people, here's where you go when you have an issue. Here's what you have to do. Let us know.
Certainly, the oversight issues, the power imbalance between grad students in a lab and the professor an issue, but also jurisdictional. Like if the salary is coming from an outside agency and yet the faculty member is on the faculty, you know, who can take disciplinary action? How do you grapple with that?
Well, that is what the department chair and the deans are charged with doing. And it is why we have ways for graduate students or others to report these problems to neutral parties outside of their department. So that folks who, you know, they don't have to go and report it to the person who's the problem. Or if they're uncomfortable going to their department chair, they can go to people from outside, within the structure that accepts and responds to these sorts of allegations. And we are holding our deans and our department chairs responsible for both reporting this and for taking action when the investigations show there's a problem.
Let's bring in a call now. Laura is joining us from Manitowoc. Hi, Laura, go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to tell Chancellor Blank that we are going to miss her. I am so sad that she's leaving. I'm glad she's moving on to something else, but so sad that she's leaving because her leadership's been great. And I just want to tell a quick story. My daughter was in that graduating class when the pandemic hit. 2019, I should say, supposed to graduate, and then graduation, of course, was canceled. And the university made the promise that they would hold a graduation ceremony later. And as the pandemic went on, we kind of lost hope about that and thought, oh, that's never going to happen. People have bigger problems, right? But the university did. They held good to that promise. And by that point, my daughter, you know, she was out working and had moved on in life, but we insisted that she go and have that closure. I mean, this was a kid that was sending us pictures of herself in her cap and gown months before graduation was supposed to be held. And so she went, yeah, and it was a great, just, we're so glad.
That closure was very important, that rite of passage, Chancellor Blank.
Yeah, well, thank you, Laurie. I was really pleased we were able to hold a ceremony in September for our students who were not able to be part of any graduation ceremony at their normal graduation time. I was amazed how many people came back. It wasn't just the students, but so many family came as well. And I wasn't particularly expecting that. It was a beautiful September day, and it might have been a delayed graduation, but it was a great graduation nonetheless.
We're going to move on to athletics. The U.S. Supreme Court ruling student athletes can receive compensation for things related to their education. What reforms are needed in college athletics?
So there's an enormous amount of discussion about college athletics now. There's a large numbers of lawsuits out there. I don't know what direction this is going. Here at Wisconsin, we have worked very hard to provide a full package of services to all of our student athletes so that our student athletes, for instance, have, you know, can come eat at the athletes table free for three meals a day. We provide health care that goes beyond the health care available to other students. We guarantee that health care if there are sports-related injuries for a number of years after they graduate. If our students leave before graduating, say to go on to play professionally, we will pay for them to finish their degree anywhere in the country at any point in their lives. And we've had athletes who've taken us up on that many years later. you know, we have to make sure we're supporting our athletes as fully as possible. And one of the things I feel good about at UW is that I think we do that quite well.
Well, UW is also making plans to compensate student athletes for academic achievement. What is evolving there?
Now, let me be clear about what that is.
Yes.
One of the lawsuits that was settled last summer in California said that universities had the ability to pay, I think it's $5,986,
correct,
some amount like that.
Yes.
I don't know where that number came from, above and beyond scholarships to students should they wish to. And a lot of schools are looking at this as an option. We have not made a final decision. That got misreported in the paper. We, like others, are looking at what our options are. Within the Big Ten, I think all of us are quite clear that if we are going to put additional money on the line for our student athletes, it is going to have to be tied to academic progress so that we, you know, want to make sure that they are every semester doing what they need to do to be in good standing as students as well as athletes. You know, we'll have to decide what we do and whether we do that. But it's a discussion that we and virtually all other schools, certainly in the top Division I teams, are having right now as a result of this court ruling.
We only have a few seconds left, but what about divesting from fossil fuel investments? Students really pressuring their institutions to do this. What is the stance of the UW?
So let me be clear that we do not hold any investments at UW-Madison. Our investments are held by our foundation, which is a separate 501c3 company, and we are actually not allowed to direct their actions. The Board of Regents has been very clear about that on a number of issues. What we do in terms of the problems that we face and of this environment and of climate change are three things. We educate great students, putting a lot of them through courses on environment and ecology. We do research on cutting-edge issues that are going to help the country mitigate and deal with these problems. And thirdly, we have to run a sustainable campus and are doing some very good things to make sure that our campus uses fossil fuels as little as possible.
Chancellor Blank, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's always good to talk to you, Kate.
You too. Rebecca Blank, UW-Madison's chancellor for 9 years, becoming Northwestern's. For Disclosure, Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of UW-Madison. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.